you're listening to the UBC Medicine Learning Network.
This podcast was recorded on the traditional, ancestral, and stolen lands of the Musqueam people. We are committed to ensuring Indigenous women's rights to health and safety, and the equal opportunity to participate in a manner that recognizes and respects Indigenous cultures and traditions.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Women's Health Interrupted. I'm Sarah Williscraft.
And I'm Chevy Mehra.
Today we are going to be discussing the effects of pregnancy on long-term brain health with Dr. Anne-Marie Delagne. Dr. Delagne is a senior research fellow at PI Femilab at Lausanne University Hospital. She leads the research group Femilab, focusing on using datasets and machine learning to study brain aging in large-scale population cohorts, with a particular interest in women's brain health. Dr. Delagne uses neuroimaging and genetics to study how female-specific factors such as pregnancy, childbirth, hormone exposure, etc., relate to women's brain health in midlife and older age, as well as maternal mental health and brain plasticity during pregnancy and postpartum.
Thank you so much, Anne-Marie, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So to start off, we just wanted to ask a little bit about, you know, what are some of the common misconceptions about how pregnancy affects the brain?
Yes, that's an interesting question. I think there are quite a lot of thoughts, you know, about how pregnancy affects the brain generally among my friends and family. Everybody has some idea, maybe based on their own experience or something they've read. And I think maybe the most common is that the brain doesn't work as well, basically. A lot of forgetfulness. I've seen, you know, mommy brain, baby brain, these different words pop up in social media. And I do think there is something in it, right? Because we know that there are some changes that occur during pregnancy in the brain. But this notion that you're basically dysfunctional as a pregnant woman, that's a bit of a misconception, I would say. However, I could also maybe add that there are some studies showing that there could be some degree of forgetfulness during pregnancy, but it seems to be very subtle and really difficult to measure in a laboratory setting. And also that is something that will normalize later when the baby is born. I don't think it's something to worry about.
And you alluded to the word changes before. So what would you say are some of the changes that happened to a person's brain when they're pregnant as opposed to after they give birth?
Pregnancy is such a big thing, and there are so many things going on in the body and in the environment as well. Like, this is really like a life-changing transition. And I think it makes sense that some changes occur also in the brain. Huge hormonal fluctuations and immune system changes that are going on in order for the body to adjust to what is happening. And I think quite recently, there has been a lot of progress in this field. So researchers have, you know, started to map quite particular changes that occur in the brain. And that would include reductions in brain structure, like brain volume in different regions. And it also looks like these reductions that are seen from before to after pregnancy, they kind of go back to normal afterwards. And then it looks like there are some dynamic changes during the postpartum period. But the specifics are a little bit hard to say yet, I think, because it's fairly new and there are lots of different studies that, you know, researchers are now working to pull together to try to understand overall what are the changes that occur and in which regions. And, you know, so it's very fascinating, really interesting what's going on at the moment. And I think the researchers who are working on this are making an enormous effort really to map these structural changes.
I just had a quick follow-up question on that. So I know you mentioned sort of the specifics are hard to get into, but are you able to say maybe what the studies are looking at and the questions they're hoping to answer?
Yes, I think there are several questions that people hope to answer. But I think one sort of basic question is, where in the brain do these changes occur? And it looks like it's several regions are involved, but these are regions that are often and shown to have some association with maternal motivation, empathy, social cognition, these types of things. Also memory. So these are kind of the basic questions, I think, that then has to be linked to some what we call functional outcome. Like, is there something measurable in people's behavior that can be linked to these brain processes? And another very important question, in my opinion at least, is risk for postpartum depression and maternal depression, and whether these changes and this huge brain plasticity that is going on, whether that can pose a risk for some women to actually end up getting depressed during pregnancy or after.
In thinking about these changes in the brain that you were referring to, Anne-Marie, how many of these would you say are permanent and how many are not?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think this is becoming a bit of a million-dollar question, I think, because we don't really know. But it looks like there are certainly some changes that are detectable quite a while after childbirth. I would say that because these changes are quite dynamic, it can be really difficult to pinpoint again like the specifics. While some changes, like volume reductions, as I mentioned earlier, looks to revert, there are some tendencies across quite a lot of studies now that some changes are more long-lasting. One thing that is really difficult in all of this is that these types of research studies are incredibly time-consuming, really difficult work. So, you know, you have to scan people's brains before they get pregnant, after giving birth, and then follow them up again and again. And preferably, we'd like to follow them, you know, into older age as well. But obviously, it's something that takes a lot of time and effort. So I would say that what we have seen so far from studies that are often cross-sectional, which means that, you know, we only have a snapshot of people's brains at some age, and then we can say something about childbirths earlier because we have data that's spanning back in time. But in those studies, it looks like there is, even in middle age and older age, there is some detectable differences between people based on how many children they have given birth to earlier in life. And these are very small effects, but they are there. And what it can mean is that there are processes going on during pregnancy. There is some kind of biological cascade, perhaps, of processes that are detectable many, many years later. But there is also this whole idea of experience-dependent brain plasticity due to parenting, which is another very interesting field, I would say, or perspective on these potential long-lasting effects.
And I think that leads well into our next question that we had. We were reading that there's, you know, an observed decrease in brain plasticity for birthing people. Brain plasticity understood as, you know, the ability to rewire itself, the brain's ability to rewire itself and develop. What does that decrease in brain plasticity mean? What does that look like?
Okay, so that's interesting. Because I think in my mind, and this is really difficult as well, like brain plasticity is super complicated and there are so many different processes involved. But I look at pregnancy as a life phase where the brain plasticity is actually increased because there are so many changes going on. A bit similar actually to adolescence, for example, where there is a lot of brain development happening and so many changes again in the body with hormones, puberty, etc. And I think if we think about it that way, then this heightened ability for the brain to change, let's call it that, with brain plasticity, is kind of what we detect then when we see these changes on MRI scans from before to after. Like, there's something has happened here, and it's likely to be linked to pregnancy then if you have scanned someone before and after. It's kind of two different things, what I'm trying to say now, because one is what is happening during pregnancy, which is kind of increased plasticity. And then you have these potential long-term effects where you can see some brain plasticity based on the parenting experience. So it's super complicated, but I can try to to say something about both, perhaps. So in the pregnancy setting, I think that maybe the most interesting question to ask is that this period of where the brain is very adjustable, let's say, and a lot of things are happening, and we know that a lot of people are at risk for mental health problems, which is similar in adolescents. Lots of mental disorders actually occur in adolescents. So we think there is a link with this brain plasticity going on in these sensitive periods. So that's one avenue that I find extremely important to study further when it comes to both pregnancy and adolescence, and also later menopause, actually. So these sensitive life phases that are quite special in terms of not only biology, but also environmental changes too. And then when it comes to the brain plasticity and parenting and long-term effects, I think the way we think about plasticity is often that, you know, you learn a new skill and then your brain changes. And so the brain is sort of changing based on something that's happening in your environment. So it's very adaptable that way. I think this becomes very relevant when we think about what type of mechanisms could underlie potential long-term changes of pregnancy. Because on the one hand side, you have the huge, you know, hormonal fluctuations and immune system changes. And then on the other hand, you have many years where you're actually raising a child and you have to learn all the time because, you know, first you have a baby and then they grow and you have all these different developmental levels. And I think it's quite challenging to be a parent. And it wouldn't surprise me if that had some effect on the brain as well. So in that perspective, I think that the best way to look into these types of things would be to compare, you know, maybe mothers with adoptive parents and fathers to see, you know, can we get closer to the mechanisms that are actually underlying these long-term changes that are observed.
Thank you for those insights, Anne-Marie. Actually, as you were talking about, you know, we need to think about these new studies, look at comparative analysis when we think about motherhood. Why do you think this is such a new area of research, as you were referencing some of the studies now that we are looking into?
There are probably several answers to this, but we know that there has been limited research on women's health, and there are several reasons for that as well. You know, that women were excluded from clinical studies for a long time. It's a bit sort of ironic because the main reason was that people were worried about detrimental effects in pregnancy. But we kind of ended up with knowing very little about women's health due to this type of exclusion. So that's one thing, and that's getting better, thankfully, in clinical trials, etc. And then I think that maybe there has been a lack of interest, and that could be linked to, or at least the majority of senior professors have historically and are still men. It could be a bit of that, I think, that, you know, the way that the field, or the twists and turns and what becomes trendy and what people are interested in, it's often kind of based on waves and trends. And I think you also see now that many of the researchers who focus on women's health are women, including in this pregnancy and parental brain field. So those are some reasons I suppose that could be relevant.
The study I had based the question on about sort of the decreases in brain, in aspects of brain plasticity, it looked at, obviously these are not linked to deficits in behavioral outcomes, but it looked at this, it looked at these sort of observances as more of a fine tuning that the maternal brain does towards itself, and just kind of simplifies and is kind of a less is more. That was the title of the study. Less can be more, fine tuning of the maternal brain. I was just wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Then, because of course this whole idea of brain volume getting smaller sounds a little bit scary, right? So yeah, the idea is that this isn't necessarily bad, but it's as you say, some fine tuning going on, and it could be that, you know, the brain has now another task, which is to focus on something completely different. And that makes a lot of sense to me. So when I talked about this heightened brain plasticity, is more of a general idea that the brain is maybe changing more than usually, you know. So it's, yeah, two different, yeah, but that makes a lot of sense what you're saying there. There's something about that. And I remember when I started to do this first project on previous childbirths in a really big data set. So I was working with Lars Vestli in Oslo, who is, he's leading a big research group there. And he had this idea of comparing women with and without children to see if we could find any differences in brain patterns much later in life. And I just remember that I felt a bit conflicted because I worried about what we would find. And I remember I said to him, like, I don't know if I want to, you know, communicate to the public that your brain looks much older because you've had two children. And that is definitely linked to those common myths that you talked about in the beginning, because I just thought that that was what we potentially might find. And all my friends like, oh, I'm so tired, I'm so stressed, I can't remember anything, I do not function in work. So for me, it was just, that's probably the way we're going with this. And then Lars told me that it might as well be the other way around. And I was like, really? Okay, that's cool. Interesting. Let's see. And that's indeed what we found. So it was quite a journey for me as well. And now I'm a bit worried about how we communicate this, that not having children is bad for your brain, which it isn't. You know, it isn't. These are really small effects, and it's just one tiny thing that might have some influence on how you age. But yeah, it's interesting to think about, you know, all the way from these very detailed studies that we're doing out of curiosity to, you know, how it can actually have an effect on, you know, maybe mental health and things that are super important. And then just how the media will communicate these findings in a way that can sometimes be a bit scary, I think.
And given that you've studied this topic for quite some time now, where do you think the future of this research is headed?
I am actually very, very optimistic. I think there is so much interesting going on. I think a lot of very, very good people are, you know, they have this as a mission now to map these structural changes across motherhood transition. And there are some really, really nice review articles that came out recently that maybe you can link in some, if you are writing something, I can send you the links. Excellent work. And it's just a really good feeling that people are finally, you know, looking at these things and thinking that's extremely interesting. And then I'm asking myself, why didn't we think about this before? Because if we really think about it, there isn't much that is more fascinating than creating a human being, right? It's just, so I'm very optimistic. I think a lot of really good things are ongoing at the moment, lots of interesting studies. I'm also very grateful that people actually run these studies, because as I was saying earlier, it's huge effort, a lot of time invested. So, but it's very important.
Thank you so much, Anne-Marie, for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you. Really enjoyed that session.
And thank you to our listeners for tuning in.
We would also like to thank the UBC Medicine Learning Network, the University of British Columbia, and everyone that has donated to the Women's Health Research Cluster for their support of this project.
If you want to help transform women's health on a global scale, donate to the Women's Health Research Cluster today at www.womenshealthresearch.ubc.ca.
If you liked the episode and want to hear more, be sure to subscribe on whichever platform you get your podcasts on to be notified when new episodes drop every second Wednesday of the month.
And check out our show notes online to dig into the resources we talked about today.
We also have other exciting women's health research being shared on our Women's Health blog and through events like the Women's Health Seminar Series. So make sure to head over to our website at womenshealthresearch.ubc.ca to learn more. Until next time, I'm Chavi Mehra.
And I'm Sarah Williscraft. Thanks for listening.
This has been a presentation of the UBC Medicine Learning Network.